So we welcome back our teacher Gil from his two-month hiatus. Welcome.
Thank you. So nice to be back. Nice to see you all, and particularly nice to sit with you again. Some of you might not know that the last month I sat retreats myself, and it was kind of done as a solitary retreat. So for a month, actually, what I did was I did four 5-day retreats, and I came home on the weekend because I have these two young kids, and so I couldn't be gone so much. So I thought of it as 4 5-day retreats as opposed to a month-long retreat. Then I probably would have related to it differently. But 4 individual 5-day retreats. And so I sat in a little cabin in Boulder Creek, and by myself. So it's kind of very nice to come back and sit with people again. It's different. And I'm still very much in the kind of mood or this mind space of having been on retreat. So to me it doesn't seem like I have anything to say. So I apologize for that. But it feels that way, but I have some things to say. I thought of saying, hopefully it's interesting for you, useful. In about 1990, you know, before that, you know, my early training in Buddhism was in Zen Buddhism and at the San Francisco Zen Center primarily, also a year in Japan. And I had even been ordained as a Zen priest. And the 1990, I'd been gone from Zen Center for a while. I'd been practicing in Asia, practicing Vipassana in Japan. And then in 1990, I came back to live and practice for another year at the San Francisco Zen Center. And at that point in Zen Center's history, there were primarily two teachers there. There were two abbots, co-abbots, both of them who I knew quite well. And one day, one of the abbots took me for a walk to have a talk with me. And there was some question about how I was going to continue my training at Zen Center. And I'd come to a point in the training where it's kind of made sense, or they started thinking it made sense for me to start being trained to receive, trained to become a teacher in the Zen tradition. But that training to be a teacher, that final kind of training, when you get authorized to be a teacher, is a training that's done quite intimately, very closely with a teacher. And so one of the abbots took me aside and was discussing this with me, this possibility. And but since there were two teachers at Zen Center, two abbots, you know, the question was, you know, which one should I do this intimate work with? And so he kind of asked me what I thought about the other one and about him. Kind of. And I said, well, one of them, the other one, I feel a really deep resonance with his teaching. I feel like his teaching is really true in some way. It really kind of represents the Dharma in some really pure, essential way. It really seems true. Precise. However, interpersonally, I don't really feel this kind of same kind of. Don't feel a very compatibility with this one. That. And then I said to the one abbot I was walking with, I said, and with you, interpersonally, I feel a tremendous amount of confidence and trust. I feel this real connection, deep connection and closeness to you, but. I don't always know if I agree with your Dharma. with your teaching. And he kind of stopped, and I don't remember exactly how it went, but it was almost as if like he stopped and turned to me and he said, "Great. That is where we'll meet. That's where we'll meet. Where we have differences, you know, and we disagree or whatever, that's where we're going to meet." And he was like, "Yeah, let's go, let's meet there." He went like, "Yes." As opposed to saying, "Oh no, he didn't reject me for being, thinking that he was wrong or had bad dharma or something." He said, "Great, we'll meet there." And so this idea of meeting, you know, how are you going to meet another person? How do you meet a teacher? How do you meet yourself? How do you meet your experience? Is, I think, a very, very important question. And so this last month, I was practicing meeting. And since, constantly kind of, how do I meet this situation? How do I meet this moment? Over and over and over again. It's quite precious to have the opportunity to be on retreat where you can really devote yourself to this question. How do you meet this moment? What happens in that meeting? Discover what happens. And, you know, most of us, I suspect, living ordinary lives outside of retreat, or in some ways the mind is preoccupied, is cut up, is concerns, accomplishing things, doing things, avoiding things, you know, whatever. That there isn't that kind of primary emphasis on how do I really kind of meet this experience? How am I really here for it? And so the training on the retreat is to do that, you know, moment by moment, over and over and over again. And primarily it's meeting yourself. In that kind of context, there was a couple of deer that came by regularly by the cabin, so I got to meet them. And there was a big moth that flew into the cabin one evening, so I had to meet that and figure out what to do with it. And but you know, in terms of living things, you know, it was on retreat, it was mostly a solitary cabin. There was at a retreat center, and they would bring every day at lunch. At noontime, they had this big kind of insulated bags that they would bring food. Once a day, they'd bring food to nearby where the cabin was and leave it there. And in it was food for lunch and food for and a mason jar with soup and little Tupperware of salad. And the soup and salad was for me to save for supper. And there was a little stove, and I could heat the soup up if I wanted. And then there was oatmeal in the cupboard, so for breakfast. And that was great. In the first couple of days, I got this lunch. I said, "Oh no, it's like almost nothing." But they realized that this is the only food I'm going to have. But for me, when I'm on retreat like this, very quickly I eat very little. And within a few days, they were sending up too much. Because I was eating so little. Anyway, so I was just there to meet. And it's really remarkable, I believe, this experience of kind of there to meet reality, meet yourself, that training to meet. And in thinking about it, I think it's very easy to not meet, not see, not be present for huge areas of our lives. So perhaps some of your analogies might be interesting. If a person has a nervous kind of nervous quality about them, a nervous itch or something, and the nervousness kind of plays itself out in its fingers, always tapping the fingers, you know. You've always seen people like this, you know, maybe always tapping, nervous. But the person spends the whole day at the computer, typing away. They might never notice that they have this nervous disposition, because you know they're always busy. They're actually maybe faster than you know the fingers than they would be if they were just not doing anything. And so you have to kind of stop typing on the computer in order to kind of see, wow, my fingers are kind of nervous. Or say that. some deep core issue for you in your life is loneliness. It's really there. It's really a prominent thing that kind of there deep inside. But say you have, you figured out, you found a job, maybe as, I don't know what, but as a, you know, the public relations manager of a large firm where all you're doing is talking to people all the time. And, you know, it's, you know, you're always busy and always talking to people, always engaged. And so it's, you know, it's kind of maybe kind of nice. But you never have a chance to meet, to confront the fact that deep inside of you, maybe even motivating how you behave in a way that you don't even realize, is some deep loneliness. And you have to kind of stop doing that job, kind of take a vacation and be on your own for a while, to realize that deep, deep down inside, there's this loneliness. One response to that would be to go back and be really busy. Go back, throw oneself back into a social life so that one doesn't have to feel lonely. It's reasonable enough. However, maybe it doesn't heal or resolve the deep loneliness. It's there, kind of in the background, ready to be activated at the moment where you kind of don't have all that social props and supports. And sooner or later, you might find yourself in a situation where all that around you is not there. And you might then find yourself a stranger to yourself because you've never really looked at that part of yourself, that loneliness. And I think some people are real strangers. Maybe everyone is a stranger to some part of themselves. They've never met it. They were taking the time to meet that part of themselves. So the mind, the heart, is very much concerned about something. It's always kind of concerned about something. I mean, many things. And there's layers and layers of concerns that it has. And when you do something like sit and meditate or sit and go on retreat, there's the opportunity to stop so much of the normal activities we do. So some of the concerns of the mind can reveal themselves. And that meeting, and those concerns show themselves in all kinds of ways. They show themselves in the kind of thoughts we have. And it's amazing how repetitive our thinking can be, or the kind of concerns it can kind of take on. And during this last month, you know, periodically the different themes would come through. You know, and I would have sometimes a delusion, the common delusion of permanence, which is, it's going to be this way forever. I'm always going to be thinking about this, always concerned about this, always have this problem. And then a few hours or a day later, it's another concern that reveals itself. And what happened to yesterday? It's amazing how quickly I left things behind on the retreat, only to have something new reveal itself. So the mind is a concern machine. It has all these concerns. And some of those concerns are there because of some personality or disposition that we have. Some of it has to do with our life experience, things we've learned from our family, from our society, from our, you know, life experiences. And they're operating. Some of them are latent, so they're not really always kind of obvious. They're kind of quietly in the background, ready to kind of sprout up in different situations. And some of them are not exactly latent, but sometimes they're active, actually, but we don't see them, because we're kind of blinders on it, we're not paying attention to it. And sometimes these concerns are quite obvious. And sometimes some of you perhaps, are quite bothered by some of the concerns of the mind, some of the ways in which the mind thinks, the themes, the ideas, the fears, the emotions, the concerns that it has, the concerns you have of what's all about. And a mind which is concerned about something is a mind which is active. And in Buddhist vocabulary, they would say a mind which is concerned in a preoccupied way, a mind which is concerned on a kind of automatic pilot, where you can't just kind of let go of it easily, is a mind which is agitated. And one summary of the Buddha's teachings, you know, is the practice, teachings and practice, which help bring the mind to peace. Bring the mind to let all this restless activity, the agitated activity of the mind, settle to bring it to peace. But in order to do that, you have to meet yourself. It would be nice, some people kind of just want to leapfrog right into their peace. And that'd be nice, you know. It'd be nice to kind of dwell in peace. But maybe there is no peace, real, genuine, kind of deep peace, unless you've actually met yourself in some deep way. Unless you've actually kind of looked at all the concerns of the mind, really been honest about it and seen what is it that makes your mind operate? What concerns? What drives it? What drives your thinking, your concerns, your preoccupations? What drives your feelings, your emotions, your fantasies, your imagination? What drives all these things? And so in doing mindfulness practice, it's a practice of this meeting, there's a kind of this process where you kind of stop all the normal activities and try to be present for your life as it is. And that being present gives you a chance to kind of see what is going on, what's happening. And you get to meet yourself. And sometimes you meet familiar friends, and sometimes you meet familiar enemies or difficulties, and sometimes you meet unfamiliar things about yourself. And sometimes things that you thought were minor concerns can loom and realize this is really big and a really major thing in my life I need to look at. Sometimes you think this is a major issue in my life and you go on retreat and you realize, you know, actually it's not such a big deal. And, you know, there's a whole perspective on what's important. It can shift dramatically when you're really there and really offer your full presence to that meeting of your with yourself, your mind, your concerns and all that. And this idea of meeting, I think, is very important because some people who do a practice like meditation are in a hurry to let go, or in a hurry to overcome whatever their difficulties are, whatever their concerns are of their mind, so that they can get to the peace, get to some great place, the great joy, or whatever that they might be chasing after. And I think that to be too quick in doing that process is disrespectful of the mind, disrespectful of the heart. What's respectful is to take the time to really allow yourself to have that meeting. And even if you disagree with yourself, like, you know, my teacher said, you know, if you disagree with me, good, that's where we'll meet. Even if you have a problem with yourself, something you don't like about yourself, something which is, there's the opportunity to meet there. And perhaps that is the place where the most important, valuable meeting is going to be. So you meet yourself. And meeting yourself means taking the time to feel it, to sense it, to see it, to acknowledge, to be honest about it. And it's not always an easy thing. You know, the rhetoric of mindfulness practice is infuriatingly simple. The rhetoric of the practice we do here is suggests that we do kind of a really simple kind of thing that anybody should be able to do, right? All we do is we stay present for what's happening in the present moment. That's all, right? I mean, what could be more difficult? You're not asked to, do quantum physics. You know, you're asked to just be present. In the present moment, just a simple thing, just what it is, right? But the mind has all these concerns and preoccupations and reactions and responses that make it all very complicated to just stay present. And so the process of learning how to be present has a lot to do with going through the discovery of what makes it difficult to be present. And what is it that needs to be done? What do you have to do to come to presence? What do you have to discover about yourself? What do you have to resolve about yourself to help you come to presence? And in sitting this month, as has happened in the past, I have tremendous respect for the value and the power of the work it takes to really come to being fully and actively present. It takes a lot. And it's really valuable work to do that meeting and come work through those things. So, what are some of the things that need to come into place, come into but need to happen so we can really be present. It's not just a matter of repetition. It's not just a matter of trying to do it. I'll be present. I'll be present. I'll be present. You know, it's not just kind of. Sometimes there's other. That's a lot of it. It's maybe a big part of it. But as you do that, you come encounter things that require things of you. One of the things for some people is that it requires. Sometimes it requires a lot of compassion. And you're not going to learn to be present unless you develop the kind of a gentleness, a softness, acceptance, a compassion, a love for what's going on, for yourself, for your fears, your anxieties, for your animosities, for whatever, or for others. That unless you have to find that compassion, without finding that, it can be impossible to work through what needs to be worked through to kind of really arrive and really meet and be present here. Sometimes what's needed is humility. Not very popular. And, you know, the first week of the retreat, for the first week I had, I haven't been on a retreat for a long retreat for a while. You know, and I'm a teacher. You know, all these people come and hear me, and I teach this stuff all the time. And you know, I know what to do. You know, and I got to make the most of it and show people I can still do it. You know, and you know, so whatever. So I had all these kind of strange ideas, but with a little bit there in the background. And so that first week, I was making too much effort. I tried too hard. You know, I'm the one who's supposed to kind of do it. And it wasn't until the second week that I realized that it wasn't enough. Pushing and making great, being the kind of the great shining example of adamantine practice was not the point. So then the second week was about softness, learning to be soft, not necessarily humble, but you know, humility exactly, but be softer and not have so much self. So sometimes you have to learn how to let go of self. Self-image, self-ideas, self-representation, self, kind of the way we kind of build up an image of ourselves or try to prove ourselves to someone else or defend ourselves to someone else or do something. So selfing goes along. And so we have to work through the selfing activity, self-identity kind of thing that comes into play in order to learn how to be present. Sometimes there's all kinds of issues, unresolved issues that need to be addressed. And some of those issues might be come up as memories, and you would think that memories, you know, have to do with the past, have no role in being mindfully present for the present, right? They're just, you know, ugly distractions. They're trying to keep you from the present. But what happens when you do a meditation practice like mindfulness? You're kind of trying to be in the present moment. It's kind of like opening up a space, an empty space. In the mind, so that the concerns, whatever is really the concerns of the mind, will flood and come into that empty space. And if there are, sometimes there are memories or experiences in the past which have never really been resolved, never really been dealt with, never really been faced properly. And so sometimes these memories will pop up in meditation. And I've, you know, since the time I started meditating over 30 years ago, especially happens to beginners, newer people, but it can happen anytime, is these memories from long, long ago will appear. So when I was an early meditator, I had a lot of memories that I'd forgotten, a lot of experiences I started remembering from when I was a child, or a young child. It just came, wow, I remember that, yeah. You know, wow. And some of them were kind of not so nice memories that I had to look at and work with a little bit. And some of them were quite beautiful memories that I'd forgotten about, and actually became kind of a resource for me because of, you know, kind of helped me as I practiced. So there can be all kinds of memories popped up, and they're important to make space for that. What we try to do in mindfulness practice is then not think too much about those memories, get lost in the world again, but we have to meet them and make space for them and really be honest about them. Now that's what it is. Sometimes those memories or those concerns have to do with behavior of ours, which maybe was not so ethical or so appropriate, or maybe caused someone harm. And sometimes it's actually not really possible to come to really being fully present until you've gone back and somehow dealt with those interpersonal issues. And maybe you need to go back and apologize, or go back and maybe you have to forgive someone. Maybe they've harmed you. And until you've actually done some act of forgiveness, maybe it's not possible to be fully present. And so forgiveness sometimes is a really important movement that people have to go through in order to come to this kind of simple thing of being present. And certainly to be present, you have to learn to let go a lot. And that's really hard, since when the mind is concerned about something, it's concerned. It's important. So it doesn't want to let go. And so even though some wisdom you have might say, oh, I should let go of this, some other aspect of the mind doesn't want to because it feels somehow that's important. And the more tenacious some thought pattern or preoccupation is in the mind, the more some part of your psyche thinks it's important. So when you meet yourself and meet this preoccupation, one of the questions to ask or one of the explorations is can you meet that place where this is important? Why is this important? Can you meet that place? So if you're preoccupied, for example, with work, and keep thinking about work or getting a promotion or finding work or something, there might be all kinds of obvious reasons why you're concerned about it, but perhaps the real reason why the mind is so caught by this issue of work is that maybe a parent told you when you were 10 that you're only going to be a real human being when you have a successful job. And so you're still trying to prove or just find out or prove to yourself that you can be a successful human being by... And there's this very deep seeds, very deep kind of idea that someone planted in your mind when you were 10 that makes this really important. And if you can meet that place, then you can let go. Maybe you can see, oh, is that really true? Is this really what it takes to be a successful human being, to have a successful job? So one of the things that happens sometimes when you come out of retreat like this, certainly happened to me. I came out of the retreat on Friday. By the end, I felt very peaceful. It was really beautiful, this sense of peace that I had. But it was peace that was certainly came with a lot of work. It wasn't simply just sat there quietly and relaxed and there it is. And the retreat center, it was very helpful for me. They had these trails that led up to the cabins where I was staying. And they had these signs as you approach the retreat cabins. And the sign said, meditators at work. And I found that helpful, that sign. Oh, yeah. This is work. Even though it also felt like a vacation. I loved doing that. I mean, I just loved that kind of work. But it's definitely work. But then I came back on Friday, and one of the very strong feelings I had is how much suffering there is in this world of ours. And so the way in which the more still your own mind can become, the more non-reactive and peaceful and settled your own mind is, the more you can see how much suffering there is around. And so this work of coming to peace, I think, is a very, very important process that helps everyone. And to learn how to meet their suffering, and this is one of the things that people have to do, is in order to be present, you have to also be able to meet, be willing to meet your suffering, the places where you don't want to go, things you're afraid of. Learning how to be present for fear, for some people, is life-transforming because they've always been afraid of their fear. It's not uncommon for me as a teacher to have people come to me on retreat and say, I had no idea how pervasive fear is in my life. It's there all the time. I didn't realize it was there all the time. But here I had a chance to sit and really see myself, meet myself. Now I see. And you hear that and you say, well, I'm not going to go on retreat. It sounds pretty uncomfortable. Why would anybody want to put themselves through that? The reason to put yourself through that is that the fear is there regardless. And it's actually much healthier to honestly see it than let it fester and be there in the background kind of subconsciously or unconsciously operating anyway. And so you have to be willing to be uncomfortable to see the discomfort, to work through it and discover a whole new relationship with it. So there's a lot of stuff that has to be worked through. And it's a, you know, and I have a lot of respect for how rich or complex the human mind is. Even though we talk about the simple thing of just being present, to get there, we really, the fullness of our humanity is met, hopefully, has to be met. And once we start getting an inkling that we're meeting ourselves, then we also begin to sense that there's actually two things going on. There's what's being met and how you meet it. There's what's being met and how you meet it. So, to use what I just talked about, fear, you might discover that, wow, I didn't realize there was so much fear. I finally met my fear. Now, how am I going to meet my fear? Can I meet it in a different way? Can I meet it with kindness? Can I meet it with compassion? Can I meet it with openness? As opposed to meeting it with more fear or anger or discouragement. So once you have this meeting happening, it's not just a matter of meeting something and seeing it. It's also a matter of seeing what can you do in yourself that can meet your experience in wiser, more compassionate, more useful ways. And to meet yourself, to find in yourself a way to meet yourself with kindness and compassion, I think is one of the great tasks in human life. And the ability to do it for ourselves translates directly, I believe, to the ability to do it for others. And I think the world has a tremendous need for people who can meet each other with care and kindness, compassion. So how do we meet? So that we meet ourselves, and then the question is, how do we meet once we're in that meeting? And as we do this work, there is a possibility of settling the concerns of the mind, settling the preoccupations of the mind. Some of them are let go of, some of them are resolved, some of them are unknotted. There's all these knots, you know, of concerns. Some of them evaporate. There's all kinds of things that happen to them, so that we know that the mind gets less and less concerned in a preoccupied way, in an agitated way. There can still be kind of conventionally kind of be concerned about all kinds of things, but there can be concern that doesn't disturb the peace of the mind. If you're concerned about something and disturbs the peace of your mind, then that's where the work is. You try to meet that place and see what you can do. And as the agitated concerns settle out, then you start tapping into deeper and deeper wellsprings of peace, of happiness, of joy, sense of well-being, of compassion. And it's really great to feel inner peace, that is peace around with you. So when I moved into the retreat center the first day, bringing my suitcase, my bags up there, I was just so happy, and it seemed like such a peaceful place, such a great place to retreat. You know, I felt all the peace of the place. And then the last day, when I was packing up and taking my bags to the car, walking along that little next ridge, in the woods, I remembered how peaceful it had been at the beginning. The place, the trees, the atmosphere, everything seemed so peaceful. And it didn't seem peaceful anymore. And for an instant I thought, oh no, you don't know what happened to me. I'm no longer in touch with it. And then I realized that now it was inside of me. And in some ways it was stronger. It was internalized rather than externalized. And then coming back, household with two young kids. Saturday's opening of Little League season. Opening celebrations and the first Little League game and yelling and screaming. And things aren't quite as peaceful. But then we meet that. And the process of coming back from retreat, coming out of meditation, and having our life reveal itself again and come back is actually a very important process as well. And rather than feeling regret, oh no, I'm losing my peace, or this, it's actually part of the whole process of learning and discovery and meeting yourself and taking it to a new level or a new phase or a different aspect. I didn't always realize that. One of my first long retreats, I sat in the Zen tradition. By the end of it, I felt so much intimacy with myself. I mean, I never felt so intimate with myself as I did in that retreat. Like, I felt I knew myself, I was knowing myself, I could see myself, depths of myself, in a way that I'd never seen myself before. And subtleties and whatever. And when it was clear that the retreat was ending, I teared up with sadness because I was going to lose that intimacy. I knew I was going to lose it as I went back into my more ordinary life. But I don't get sad anymore by it. Now it's okay. Now it's the next phase. Now I get to meet myself in this situation. So I hope all of you have a chance to meet yourself, say hello. And I hope that when you meet those parts of yourselves that you're a stranger to, that are strangers to you, it's an ancient and wise custom in many parts of the world to offer hospitality to the strangers. So I hope that as you meet those parts of yourself which are strangers to you, that you're a good host. So I hope this was an okay talk. I'm kind of out of habit of giving talks. So it seems a little strange sitting here, but probably the strangeness will pass with time. Thank you very much.